with the big mouth. Hello and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. It is the podcast which is about tiny plastic people. This week I am your host James, and I am joined by three lovely other hobbyists from the worlds of hobby, which we find on the internet. Excellent. So we are the podcast of tinyplasticpeople.com. It is a community podcast, and a community website. You find articles there, and you find people like us on the podcast. I think that's enough of me talking about those things. So let's go over to let people introduce themselves. So at the top of my screen, I have Drew.
Hello.
Hello, Drew. How are you today?
I'm all right. I'm surprisingly tired for it being a Monday, which is, I don't know, is this letting people see behind the curtain for when we record and then also how long it takes us to edit things?
Mondays can exist any time you like them to. So to my right on my little video screen, I'm joined by Rachel, aka Nersh.
Hello. I'm back.
You're back.
Happy to be here.
Amazing.
Convincing.
Beautiful Monday evening.
Excellent. And chuckling away to my top left is Pete, aka Fienya from Discord.
Hi, I'm that one. I'm painting a Helldrake right now. How are you?
Not painting a Helldrake. So, as always, we like to start with a little bit of the stuff we call just talking about hobby and stuff. So, which one of you would like to start before I nominate someone?
Well, I'm painting a Helldrake right now.
You're painting a Helldrake? Okay, Pete, what else have you done?
Well, I recently finished painting every single Horus Heresy miniature that I own, that exists in my house. Because apparently there's some new Horus Heresy things coming soon, and I'm quite excited about it. Don't know about the rest of you guys.
We have heard the rumours.
The rumours, the reveals, the Tiny Plastic People special featuring two of us. Were you on it as well?
No, I was hiding.
Yeah. Well, this is before we discovered that you're a secret Night Lord simp, Rach. So, you know, you'll be on episode two, I imagine. Painting Conrad Kurz. Silence speaks volumes.
He's a beautiful man.
By the time this podcast comes out, it will probably be, I don't know, Heresy will be out and everyone will be bored of it.
It'll be out. I will never be bored of it. I will never log off the battlefield to the 31st millennium.
YouTube expressions are correct, and it's terrible for various reasons.
Don't listen to the thumbnail heads, like, steer you astray.
Heresy is broken.
I think YouTube probably peaked when it was that guy that said his Uber driver sucked him off. Everything else since then is downhill.
I think it was downhill before.
Anyway, that's probably not that relevant to hobby. So after having finished a few random 30k vehicles and characters that I had knocking around, Black Legion, I don't know, that's kind of the closest I can get. That's my 30k methadone right now. But also painting a lot of black and gold takes effing forever. So, this Helldrake has been a sort of millstone around my neck that is very gradually flapping away into completion.
Are you telling me I could be hobbying during the podcast recording as well?
I see podcast recording sessions as merely just an excuse to paint things.
You need to optimize your hobby time.
I also...
If you hear lots of clattering, that's me trying to rearrange my desk so that I can do anything.
There's nothing more evocative for a podcast to have than the swish of paint water in the background.
Unfortunately.
That's the hobby ASMR channel.
As we discussed before, RTX voice will take away...
Well, it's taken away so much from us.
Because if it doesn't, and it's really bad to edit, I'm going to leave all your mouth noises in. And as a punishment for hobbying...
Is that not why people listen to the podcast?
Come for the hobby, yeah. Stay for the mountains.
Why else did I drink an entire pint of milk before coming here?
So yeah, I'm just all Space Marine all the time.
Have you played any games then with your Space Marines all the time?
No, I finished painting all my Tyranids recently. I've been getting a couple of games with them from our community meetup a few weeks ago, and then played a game with Podcasts Crunchy recently as well. But no, I haven't ever played a game with my Chaos Space Marines, actually. Not ever once.
Have you not?
No.
Just waiting for the overpowered rules to come out when they get a codex.
Have we not
clearly
played? I'm sure I've played your Black Legion.
You have played, and I believe this was the first ever Role Models meetup, Dines' Black Legion alongside my Death Guard.
Did I not play...
I remember that.
Your... the two Marines you get from Blackstone Fortress.
Ah. Yes, okay. So technically there was some Black Legion miniatures on the table, yes, because that was, again, a Death Guard army that had the Blackstone Fortress models with it, which, yeah, has three Space Marines.
And some cultist friends. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you got me there, Drew.
Got you on a technicality.
Sherlock Holmes style flashback.
Because the Mind Palace of 3-4 years ago. Jesus, it was probably 4.
2018.
Yeah, disgusting.
It is disgusting.
But yeah, much like that game, I have to admit defeat. I do remember that I lost that game.
So have you been up to anything else other than Gold Trim and Heresy Boys?
Well, yeah, as I say, I painted a Tyranids army recently from basically zero.
Did you slip that in, or did we just miss that?
I mentioned it briefly.
It's just a little Heresy,
little Heresy army and a little Tyranids army.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, 80 miniatures or so.
Just 80 miniatures, yeah.
You know, it's chicken feed, as our illustrious political class might say.
Well, I'm frankly sickened.
As well you should be.
Let's jump over to Rachel. What have you been up to in the hobby world?
I have been painting lots of... So the old name for it was... it's completely...
Garden of Moor?
Out of my head. Yes. Garden of Moor, thank you, Peter. It's the old sort of graveyard terrain from Warhammer Fantasy, and it's sort of been repackaged in various forms over the years for Age of Sigmar. And it's just a bunch of tombs and fences to go with them and stuff like that. And I had a huge box and I've just been painting that. Which took a lot longer than I was hoping it would. Because there's just so many little bits of detail. Ugh.
It's way more detailed than you expect, isn't it? Like all the roses, that's the thing I mostly remember.
Yep. Like I wasn't painting them particularly... I wasn't trying particularly hard on all those little details because you don't really notice them with terrain anyway. So, but even still, it was a huge volume of stuff to do, and it took me ages, and I'm very glad it's over. Although I'm already thinking of like things I can do to make them better, like add some flock or mossy bits or something.
It does look good, I though, because you've gone for this cool, like, is it a metallic-y roof sort of situation?
Yeah, so the like roofs of the tombs or whatever are supposed to be sort of
Death House.
Copper, right? So they're all very greased. And that was just I think I started with like a sort of coppery brown non-metallic paint, and then splattered it with lilac oxide. Great paint if you're doing copper oxide stuff. And then just did a big sort of heavy dry brush with Sikorix bronze. Or, you know, the the bronze slash copper color paint of your choice. Yeah, and then like the stone is all it's sort of like a transition from a very dark purple up through a sort of slightly purpley blue into sort of turquoise, just through sort of series of dry brushing steps, which is very fun and satisfying to do. But when you're doing it on like, I don't know, how many separate pieces of terrain is that? It's got to be like 50 unique pieces, right? It took a long time. Yeah, and having finished that, for some reason I just couldn't quit the death theme, and I'm now painting a necromancer and a white king, which are two models I think are just absolutely amazing, so characterful. These are the ones, the GW ones. I've only just started them, so I don't know. But yeah, and like they're like super cheap for characters.
I think the necromancer is possibly the cheapest plastic character that GW still sell for whatever reason.
Banshees aren't them,
yeah,
as well.
Very high quality impulse buy, that one.
And resistant to inflation.
Don't know if he'll ever make it into an army, but you know, he will look cool. Apart from that, played the first game with the new Nighthaunt Battle Tome last night.
Ooh.
Not last night, yesterday. Which is really fun. They are much more powerful, but more importantly, much like just more fun to kind of play with. They have better, more themey rules.
What's the key? Yeah. The key change to them for somebody that doesn't really keep up with this stuff?
It's kind of hard to pick out one specific thing because, like, previously their like allegiance abilities page, which is like the rules that apply to the whole army, were kind of like two things. Like everything is ethereal, which means that they you can't rend them, but also that they can't modify their own saves. So you're kind of stuck. If you have a 5-up save or a 4-up save, you're just stuck with that.
Yeah, never gets better or worse.
And the other like main ability that they all had was that when you charged, if the natural result of the dice was 10 or more, you just got to immediately fight in the charge phase, which is like...
Oh, yes.
Which was like super cool when it went off, but like it's so rare that it happens that you can't really rely on it. And yeah. And what they've done there is they've made ethereal better in like three ways. They've made it so that you just have a ward of 6-up like all the time. You don't need to hang around your heroes anymore to get that ward. So you're a bit more tough. You can retreat and charge, which is like, it's huge, especially since they've changed the charging thing so that now it's not only on a 10-up that something special happens. It's like on a, I can't remember the specific numbers, but on like a 4-7, you like the target enemy will like not be able to hit you as easily. On a like above that, they have -1 to their saves, and if you get like a 9, 10, 11, 12, then they fight last.
Ah.
And like all of these things can stack, so you want to just like always be retreating and always be charging everything all at once.
So you get that real like swooshy in and like swooshy out, like Casper the ghost, but violent.
Because like what I was finding in the game yesterday was that like a lot of the units in the army don't have like they're not like particularly durable, they're not like particularly, they've got lots of healing, but they're not that tough ultimately, and they don't have like amazing attacks, they have pretty reasonable attacks, but all of like so much of their sort of threat level comes from just multiple units charging in all at once, right, stacking all of these debuffs on the target, and then like they're fighting last, they have like just like an effective 3 points of rend on them, so they can't like stop your crappy little chain rasps from hitting them. It's very satisfying. The main problem is like because you always want to retreat and charge to get those bonuses, then that means you're basically going to be touching your whole army 3 times in your turn. But what, the first time to retreat, the second time to charge, and then the third time to pile in when you're actually fighting, which is kind of a recipe for slow play, but it's okay.
Yeah, I guess most of the time you're just going to be retreating, like, you know, just out of combat, right?
So, oh yeah, yeah, you're literally backing up, yeah, like, yeah, absolute minimum.
So it could be a lot worse, especially if you're using movement trays, as sensible people do.
Yeah,
and I never do.
Yeah, although like kind of the way that Age of Sigmar works, I kind of always find like I end up taking things off the movement,
yeah, trays. That's
just,
true.
Like, pile in effectively and stuff in like combat. That. It's always really fiddly. Yeah, I don't know. I think like fortunately the army has ways of playing that aren't reliant on lots of tiny little 25mm base guys. You can have a more elite army where you're moving less.
Are the days of a shitload of the big ghosts back? What are they called? Morngulls? Something like that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Or the Forge World.
Yeah, yeah. That was
I'm not sure if they're even still on sale.
Oh, maybe they're legends.
Oh, the big one.
I hope so. With hate that model.
A lot of people do. A lot of people do. It is quite different to a lot of Nighthorn stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't really fit the aesthetic, which I guess is okay. But I don't know. I'd love to see Nighthorn get a monster.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, that's pretty much what I've been up to.
Lovely. Well, speaking of Forge World and not fitting the aesthetic, Drew, what have you been up to?
Wait a minute.
that's too accurate. Now I'm just appalled, questioning my life. What have I been doing? I've definitely played one game. I'm trying to think if I can just do this entire thing with loads of innuendos, because I had a three-way and then I've been playing with myself after that. So,
Not satisfied.
No. In the Crusade rules, there is an add-on rule book called Catastrophe, and it's entirely multiplayer games for 4 to 3 players.
Can I butt in? Surely all games of Warhammer that aren't solo play are,
well,
multiplayer.
You know, there's more than the usual two. I mean, I play it on my own all the time because I've got no friends, so that's the level I'm at. If you have 3 players or 4 players, you could have always have this problem where it's like, I mean, 4 is easy because it's just 2v2 usually. But if it's if you're looking for a 3-player game, you either do 2v1, or you normally, or used to back in the day, have to kind of like mangle 40k into kind of working as a 3-player game. But the missions in Catastrophe are actually quite good for doing reason. I mean, this is Crusade, so it's not, you know, aimed at being competitive, but it's reasonably balanced kind of games between having 3 players who are all kind of up against each other. So I've been playing quite a lot of that just by chance of having, you know, two other people come around and sort of play a game. I've been enjoying it. I played one game of that. And because it's probably going to go out of print, because all the Crusade books seem to go out of print, if you're interested, I'll definitely try and pick that up.
Might have to, actually, because I feel like I've never played a game of, more than 2 people with Warhammer where it hasn't been just like, you either wonkily play an existent mission or wonkily just say, well, we're just going to fight and there's maybe an objective in the middle.
Yeah.
So yeah, having something like designed for purpose there sounds quite good.
I mean,
thing.
There's a load of extra rules that are all tied into like balance and stuff, but I don't use them because they're extra rules, and 40K's got enough rules, to be honest. But it does have certain things that, you know, that actually make a game with three players different to a game with just having, like, what's the word? One I really like. Oh, it's like you have to rescue dignitaries from stasis pods. So you go around, you pick up dignitaries. So it's like a kind of relic mission, but you're reclaiming people. Mm-hmm. But at the start of the mission, you have to declare whether you're rescuing them or seeking to do bad things to them. But you don't have to tell the truth. So you score like XP that. As you go along, based on what you've said, I think. And then also then at the end you score, not XP, victory points, sorry. And there's similar things like that where you can basically say, oh, well, I'm team rescue, and then all team rescue score points. But then maybe at the end you were lying.
You've rescued them to death.
And, you know, your allies who thought they were going to get a bunch of VPs off you, so they let you kind of keep hold of these people, they don't get anything, and you get stuff.
Ah, so there's a bit of like Fragile Alliance sort of gameplay to
exactly.
it. That's cool.
So that, you know, and that's obviously what you get between having three players. And, you know, the other way we play it is that, you know, you play it with a bit of camaraderie at the table, and you're like, well, if you attack me, I'm going to go and do this. I don't care if I lose. I'm going to go and murder your leader or whatever. So yeah, I've been sort of enjoying it, and you know, there's a bit of, and because it's Crusade as well, it means that not everyone's playing just for the victory. You might be playing for your own agendas. So you know, if you've got the way the Tau players work is they've got like their own things they want to accomplish on the table. So they might be like, well, I just want to, you know, get my Earthcast people or Watercast people to do this thing. So if you just leave me alone, I won't fuck you up. But if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to bury you under, you know, indirect fire missiles. So
I like this a lot. Sounds like a game I've not played but watched significant amount of via the medium of Pete escape from Tarkov.
Oh yeah,
in 40K.
To me it sounds a bit like Twilight Imperium. What was it? This big space game.
Yeah. What, gigantic day-long space game.
Twilight Imperium.
Yeah. I was like, words?
The one you never finished.
Yeah, I mean, I played one game of that in my life, and that's got that same sort of, like, you've got your own agenda, you've got your own sort of shit going on, but also you want to be trying to tell people that you haven't got certain things going on while telling other people that you do have those things going on. But everyone's in the same room together and they all know exactly what you're doing. And everyone loves a game where you lie barefaced to people.
I mean, the extreme example of this actually was when I played this last year, start of the year or something like that. And it was myself as Gene Steel Colts. It was Tau and it was Dark Eldar. And the Dark Eldar player thought he was being very clever. Turn one, going first and then pulling all his units off the board so he could then sweep in and annihilate the sort of remainders after the Tau and the GC of the Cults had fought it out. But then we just came to a gentleman's agreement to wait until turn two.
Excellent.
it was obviously, you know, that's the kind of thing that you can add to a game like that. So yeah, I've been playing that. I have been 3D printing some Tau of my own, or not Tau.
Excuse me, we don't condone that kind of piracy here. So I'm going to have to bleep that.
I'm not going to bleep it. It's
the power of the editor.
James could go in.
At the palm of your hand.
They're not Tau. It's a person who does Tau-inspired models. And most importantly,
that's better.
Does a lot of very cute robots. So it's my entire army of big and small drones now with little legs, so I can relive my batteries not included dreams of having an army of that. So I've printed that out, and I tried them against my Gene Steel Colts, and Tau seem to be quite good, even though they've been tweaked back quite a lot. But
yeah, I mean, their rules were sort of, yeah, just in the right circumstance, sort of oppressively good. So I think the nerfs have knocked them back down to just simply good.
So yeah, beyond that, actual hobby stuff, I feel like I've been doing quite a bit, but I have been.
You've been painting Horus Heresy things as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm trying to think back to sort of realistically what was a kind of good chunk of time to talk about. Because I missed the meetup because I got COVID and kind of felt hungover for 2 weeks. And that had me blast through all my 15 mil stuff because my hands were shaking and I felt terrible. So I couldn't paint anything properly. So I ended up painting 15 mil soldiers and tanks.
It's quite impressive, really.
I didn't give a shit about them. And I'm just like slap some camo dry brush on them. So yeah, last month I painted a heck of a lot of things, but they were all tiny. And then yeah, with Heresy, new Heresy being announced, I've been leaning into trying to finish off my Dark Angels, which isn't going to happen, but I can pretend it will.
Making progress, that's all that matters.
I've got loads of basing to do because not only do I have an incredibly complicated paint scheme for them, I've got an incredibly complicated basing scheme for them as well.
Name a more iconic duo, Drew and overly complicated X.
Yeah. So, sad face. Oh, I've just realised something. I built a load of custom bases off the job with another milliput for them and carved a load of crystals out of sprues. But after the Bathgate meetup last year, I magnetised all my Dark Angel bases. So now I have a set of half-done decorative bases which have no magnets and then a set of on the models.
Oh no.
Oh, I didn't think of this. Oh no. Okay.
live reacts here, folks.
Just fucking myself up. I also finished my Terminators and my Tartarus pattern Terminators. Yeah, Tartarus pattern, the fast Terminators, which I'd made as infantry hunting. And I realised that, like a complete moron, I've put the Iron Wing symbols on them, not the Fire Wing symbols on them. And
historical accuracy compromised. Exactly.
So now I have a set of Lightning Claw equipped vehicle hunting Terminators, which hopefully.
Oh my god, you're going to be the laughing stock.
I know. Or.
Well, you'll really, really be able to kill land speeders with that. So
hopefully New Heresy is going to save me from my terrible mistakes. But we'll see. I'm trying to think what else I've been doing. And I've been painting a load of busts and stuff very slowly.
Art. Yeah.
Fine art. The finest of arts.
And that's been painful because they're really nice busts and I just want to do a really nice job of them. And
jeez, Drew, take the compliments.
Like all good hobbies, it's painful.
It is all good hobbies painful, yeah. It's just all my Miyazaki gifts where you're just like, oh, why am I doing this? Film is awful. Why am I doing another one? But then I'd feel like imposter syndrome comparing myself to Miyazaki. And
just think of that quote where he was looking at the animation the people had done and he just like said, whatever it was, it's like, that is an affront to God.
Yeah, this is the worst thing. Why have you done this? I mean, that is quite, yeah. I've certainly felt that about some stuff.
Jesus, true.
Oh, I feel like I should move on. I've got some other hobby stuff I've been doing, but I'll talk about it later because it's been an experience in a different way. James, save me. What have you been doing?
I mean, I can't save you very much because I haven't actually been doing very much, even though this is like my first pod since like the end of January, I think. So I've, well, for the Bathgate meetup, not Bathgate, where was it? Warsaw. Yeah, Warsaw. There we go. On the way to Warsaw, instead of, I completed painting my custodian's army and then I got COVID. So, joining Drew in the got COVID feel like shit club, and it turns out
I also couldn't make it, but it's still in valor if I claim they had COVID. I think I just had a bad cold.
I mean, a bad cold is,
it was a bummer.
It did suck that a lot of us missed that thing due to rampaging colds and pandemics. So
I thought I had a cold.
Can't believe I'm the only one with the dedication to turn up. and who also didn't get ill.
I mean, I only thought I had a cold until I checked, did my COVID test the morning before leaving and tested positive, which was a complete fucker. So anyway, I'm interrupting you, James.
Oh, no, it's fine. Let's all tell our little COVID stories. I started coughing uncontrollably, and then I was just like, I think I've got COVID. And then I woke up the next day, and it turned out I did have that COVID. Anyway, what have I been doing? So, yeah, I completed my I made a legal custodies army for both Warhammer 40,000 and the Horus Heresy. So that's quite nice. I completed my first box of custodians that I bought in 2018, and they are now actually painted in 2022. I finished my jet bikes off. That was fun. I love the little Dawn Eagle jet bikes. And did a shield captain, did a Vexilla. I think that's all the exciting stuff out the way. But yeah, I've been kind of ploughing through. I did a few of the Terminators because you can take them in units of one, which I find amazing. So I've painted two units of those.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's because you can still do the stratagem where you like drop a unit of nine and then you say, now they're all individual characters. And then they all split off and run around and cause mischief.
Oh, I thought they had to come in like a minimum size unit and then you did
too, but you can also take them in a unit of one.
Oh, wow.
Which is ridiculous. Really good for... I think it's kind of just make Crusade and like those smaller power level armies just have a bit more flavour.
Yeah.
So, that's my assumption. Seeing as I've never played with them, seeing as aforementioned illness... Yeah, so that was actually pretty much been all I've been up to. I also painted my first Trog. That was fun. I bought the Trog army at the end of 2019, I think, when there was the Christmas box set. And, sorry, Battle Force playset, whatever they call that.
That was more recent, I think.
Maybe, I don't know. It wasn't 2020, that's for sure. So it stayed in a box throughout that time. So, yeah. Or maybe it was that box. I don't know. I don't care. But anyway, they've been sitting unpainted for ages. So I painted a Trog and that was really fun to sort of experiment with. So I'd already sprayed them all and I'd started with a grey base coat, which I don't usually do. And then I'd done a Zenithal. I want to hear the music in it when you say it.
It's Zenithal. Just do it as...
All right. Anyway, so there was like a wraith bone over the top, so it had a bit of tone to it. And then like then a base coat of contrast paint over that, so trying to just capture all like the light and the shadows of the model without actually having to do that much work. And then going into this process of making loads of work over the top of it, so using like glazing over the top to build up like the belly with like a sort of like painterly white and sort of fleshy belly, and picking out like the scars and all like the skin, and then doing all the rocks over the back, which I realized I do it incredibly hard way, where it's like I start with like Zandri dust and then work it up to be like proper like scales. But when I looked on the box, which I hadn't done, they just go to blue, and I was like, oh well, I've chosen the hard way of doing this. But it's really fun, and It was just like a really good excuse to just lavish some attention on a model for a bit.
It is a very pretty Trog.
Everyone should have Trogs. They're great models.
I think everyone should. They're so full of character and they are actually like quite easy to paint, really, because they've got so much like all the detail is in the model. So like even if you splodge a brush in the wrong place, it's still good. And
I think one day when I return to the goblins, I'll be doing...
Look big friends.
On my mantelpiece, it took me 3 months to paint. Been fairly consistent 3 months.
I've got another nine, because there's the big Trog as well. So
yeah, Dad's Trog.
By 20, yeah, if I do one a year at the moment, then I'm going well. And finally, I have been working on a Mindstealer Spherax, which I bought on a whim, because I said to myself, hey, I like this painting things and just picking up something to paint for the just sheer hell of it. So I've been working on that
And you like cats.
Yeah, and I got cats, so it's good to paint cats.
It's interesting.
Have you painted it to look like Aki or Tofu?
I chose... Oh, sorry, just getting distracted by the rain and knowing my partner's out in it. I have painted it like neither of them.
It's not big enough to be Aki, is it?
Betrayal.
Yeah, it's not big enough to be Aki, and it's not naughty enough to be Tofu, so...
Can I say, it was very interesting that I said, you like cats, and you said in response to that, yes, I have cats.
I can relate. Yeah.
Which I can take as a subtle correction.
I mean, it's the brain worms, they get you. That's how they, they encourage.
Don't have a choice,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, there's no choice. You get one, you get two. You keep having two forever.
Doesn't that also make you into a kind of business leader? This is like a separate podcast now where we talk about brain worms. But...
Oh yeah, brainworms and Alan Sugar, a true story or something.
Oh Jesus!
But yeah, I've been to paint that. I've been following. I haven't actually shown any pictures of it. It's my secret project, and maybe I'll actually finish it by the time this podcast comes out. You never know.
Not one of
them. I know. I keep it secret because I know it upsets Michael. So
a lofty goal.
I followed the heavy metal masterclass, which turns out is quite a fun little thing to watch when you're sitting in the bath drinking a beer and just go, ooh, model painting. And so Louise did a video on painting Tyranid Chitin, which I always called Chichin. So I learned two things. I learned how to paint that and how the word is pronounced. And it's all like, it's like purple that goes to pink that goes to yellow, and I thought that would look absolutely badass on a cat thing. So that's the sort of painting scheme of
cat chitin,
happy chitin. So yeah, and that's about it for my hobby. I haven't played any games. I'm hoping to play some very soon because we've got the Queen's Jubilee coming up, and I intend on playing Warhammer over it. So
Warhammer Jubilee.
You've got to respect the Queen by playing Warhammer. I'm not sure how this works, but
I mean, yeah.
She famously loved Epic.
Yeah,
I believe.
Well,
that's
now you've ruined Epic.
Never coming back. Because Charles's game strict... was Man of War. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Andrew. So Charles, I can accept.
Hipster.
It's like...
No, Andrew was into Dreadfleet. Boo. Lovely. Okay, well, we've nattered enough about hobbies. I'm going to prevent that going any further than it needs to go.
Before we do libel.
Is it libelous to say
just
okay, libel has ended. Let's move on to subjects. So this week we have a number of subjects, and I'm going to inflict the subject of Pete upon us first of all. So, Pete, what have you brought for us today?
The subject of Pete. Really, I just want to sort of big up one of the sort of smaller products that GW's put out recently.
40K is a smaller
product. Well, exactly, for 40K, yeah. 40K, I mean,
is a smaller product. It's a...
No. I was this little game, 40K. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's pretty niche, but I think it's got legs. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people who play 40K, I think, especially in the last few years, have kind of been a bit put off by the fact that, you know, there's a lot of like campaign booklets and a lot of it has match play rules in. And I think if we're all honest with ourselves, like even those of us who aren't like super competitively minded, match play is kind of the way that we like to play as a default, or even if we don't like to, it kind of is that for a lot of people. And with all these like new scenarios that are always coming out, and you know, the sort of rules of army construction getting tweaked all the time, I think it can be quite overwhelming at times. But a few months ago, GW, quite sort of, you know, under the radar, just put out alongside whatever was being released that week, a set of cards called Tempest of War. And it turns out, I think it's one of the best products that they've ever made, because it's sort of like a halfway house between the full matched play game, which I think a lot of people find to be just a little bit much for a sort of pickup game, casual game, and the open war cards that they put out with 8th and 9th edition, and I think there's Age of Sigmar versions as well. So instead of the open war where you just draw like a deployment map, an objective and a twist, which is quite simple, can be quite fun. I've had some really good open war games in AOS and in 40K. But sometimes you get something really wonky that doesn't really work that well. Tempest of War, you draw a deployment map, much like open war, but then you get a objective based, like an objective marker based scenario, and then you also have each player has a deck of secondary cards which you can shuffle and redraw with a stratagem, they're quite varied. There might be like kill count ones or action based ones where you need to be in the opponent's deployment zone, or you know, some basic objective things. But yeah, the random nature of it and the extra sort of dimension that you get from the secondaries really, really makes it like a lot more involved than the open war cards. But because it's so varied, I think it really have a lot of legs to it. And I don't know, I don't think I ever really want to play a full match play mission anymore, just because this is so much easier to pass. And also, it's just a box of cards, and that means I don't have to drag a book called Calamity or whatever around with me.
It's a very small book, the catastrophe books.
Wow. It's the principle.
I mean, I don't even know like what books we're actually on for 40K anymore, because I just decided
it's a lot to keep track of.
If I wasn't playing, I just wouldn't need to pick up the books. So I just stopped trying to buy the books, because they were, the lore in them was never particularly great, and the like rules and stuff was always just adding more and more complexity to a game which I wasn't getting enough time to play anyway. So these sound great, to be honest.
And I mean, I think when it was one chapter approved per year, I was very, very happy to keep track of that, and you know, but now it's a bit more hot and heavy with releases. So I think it's I've moved into the sort of mind space where I find it to be like totally optional, and I think it would be really good if they did an AOS version.
I'm sort of in the same boat as you, because recently I've started playing with the you've got the open war generator in the core book for AOS, and it's kind of just an iteration of the same sort of open war system they've been doing for years. They used to do cards for it, which honestly makes such a huge difference, which is like the thing that tipped me onto trying open war was that somebody on the internet had very helpfully converted all of the stuff from the core book into like a card format,
right?
And then I print those out, stick them in little card holders, and now when me and my friend want to play a game, we just draw out the cards.
Yeah,
and you get a deployment, and there's some quite wacky ones, like with weird Tetris shapes, and other ones where it's just really standard.
Yeah, so
like yesterday we had Pitched Battle, which is just my deployment zones at my side of the table and your deployment zones at your side of the table, and then you choose an objective, and some of them are just like you need to hold all the objectives, and others are like you need to go and get this magical artifact, and it could be one of six different weird things that all have different effects, and then you have to drag it back to your side of the table. Haven't played that one yet, but it's the same fun.
Yeah.
And then there's a twist, which like can be stuff like flying is harder, or everyone rerolls battleshock tests. And they're quite significant. And then finally, each of you gets a ruse, which is like something you can use at some point in the game to switch things up. So yeah, like yesterday, yeah. my opponent's ruse was reinforcements. So he got to just like bring in one of the units that I'd destroyed and like just set it up again in sort of in ambush, which was huge.
Yeah.
Did not appreciate having two Dacrothian guard, which are the Stormcasts on the big lizards, showing up behind
Lederlinder.
Yeah. But it's just like it's really quick and straightforward, and crucially none of the objectives involve like keeping track of points, really. Like a lot of them are either like instant death kind of scenarios, or you have to play it out till the final round to see who's won. So like in the game yesterday, I was able to just do a bit of like shenanigans in the final turn and get enough people onto two of the objectives to like win the game. But it was like really close, and it was like every turn mattered. It's great. I love it. And I think like it helps to so I guess like both Warhammer, Age of Sigmar and 40k have like very asymmetrical armies, and sometimes depending on who's got a book recently and that sort of thing, some of them are just like kind of a lot more powerful than other ones, particularly in the context of matched play, which is like what ostensibly it's all sort of designed around. But like when you're doing Open War or Tempest or whatever, you are the sort of element of randomness helps take the sharp edges off in a way.
Yeah, I agree.
It takes some of like the pressure cooker effect of the whole like, is your army got the newest thing? No. Is your army maxed to the 9th? Maybe. But it just removes that whole thing from it, because it is essentially a random mission. And then if you lose, you can either just draw, like sometimes you just, I remember,
blame the mission.
but also it just means it doesn't almost like matter as much. You can just re-rack and play again if you get like absolutely stuffed because someone drew like the objectives, which all just made sense. But sometimes you can have like that sort of push and pull where one person is trying to spread out their forces and one person is trying to infiltrate between them all to get a single objective and things. So
like the various objectives and twists and stuff like that, they can all encourage or force you to play in a really different way than you would normally, which I think is like that's the way that a tabletop war game should be for me. It shouldn't really necessarily be about who's got the toughest list or whatever. It should be about sort of reacting to the tactical situation, the board, and
nice, puts it all.
The other thing that I really like about this, sorry, I'm just gonna, I have to say this, the cards are massive.
Oh yeah,
it's like twice the size of a normal GW card thing, and I like that about it because it makes me feel dead little.
So bigger card. I mean, I suppose it's like, and that also just helps stand out a bit from all the other kind of card clutter you get on the table.
Yeah, exactly. The million tokens on any given table.
And who doesn't like a big card? Sounds excellent.
Amazing. So from big cards and random rules, let's move on to something which Drew has entitled Fucking Rules and That.
Yeah. I'll start with a little story. So I said the hobby thing, I've been 3D printing. What I've also been able to 3D print is boats, which are my special interest area, which is olden days boats and that don't have any models because no one else is interested in them. And there's very little rules to go with these lack of models because no one's interested in olden days boat war games, and I am a sad individual.
I understand there are different like there's history, like was long or something, and that means that there's lots of different eras or it's sort of like in Warhammer 40k, there's also Warhammer 30k. I understand that's kind of like what history is.
Drew's equivalent is like being really into Warhammer 37k. Yeah, because the ships that Drew likes are like the ones that no one in pop culture ever thinks about, because it's before World War One, and like after they invented making ships out of metal. So people didn't really know what the hell they were doing, and you get some exquisite monstrosities.
There's like a brief period when they had one battle and some ships rammed each other and did loads of damage, because driving your ships into each other is, you know, quite effective. And they just decided, like, yeah, we may have a traditional battleship, but
steam-powered rams
are the way forward. And it turns out that guns are actually also quite good. So, yeah, there's this very narrow time period, basically post-American Civil War, then up to just before World War One, where the boats are all terrible. And I really like it.
The signature ships of that era are named after the ships that made them obsolete, because they're called pre-dreadnoughts. They're named after the things that they weren't.
Wow, that'd be really weird writing it. Like you're drawing up the schematics for this new ship you're designing, and it's like, what's it called? It's called pre-dreadnought.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make better ones in the future.
Working up. Yeah,
it's like referring to your car as, it's like, oh no, that's just my pre-Persia.
But
pre-MW.
With all these caveats in place, it basically means that I've got the chance of finding any bastard to play with is zero. So I.
Hey, if you print them, I'll play it.
Well, I've printed the rules, and I've also printed the rules. I've discovered Wargame Vault is this awful place where you can buy other people's rule books, and some of them are incredibly specific.
Other people's hastily written scrolls about warfare in the 15th century between,
yes, very, very specific,
various yep. English towns.
And in this case, I bought one set of rules which I just couldn't read. They're like 100 pages long and just impenetrable. So I got an easier set of rules which are only about 50 pages long, called Admiral of the Fleet, and I've been trying to play this game with myself with three ships as opposed to, oh no, two ships aside as opposed to like entire fleets, and it's just horrific. It's what you imagine when you think of a historical game with all the negative connotations that go with it. There's a
lot. Have you like read the description of this? It's like, bored with just moving ships about the table and doing whatever you want. Turn after turn,
without
a mechanism that realistically reflects the difficulties and rewards inherent in commanding a fleet of ships, then Admiral of the Fleet and its companion publications, the Flag Officer's Handbook, and the Scenarios Volume 1, may be just what you were looking for.
Save me from being judged by the internet, James, by not pricing up how much I spent on these rule books.
Ooh,
well, you bought them as watermarked PDFs, so it's probably the cheaper route.
It is the cheaper route, but there's part of the bit which you resold me on it is the Flag Officer's Handbook, which is the only way you can give orders to your fleet are by using the actual naval flags to communicate instructions.
You have to learn
not
semaphore.
Not even semaphore. It's more basic than that. So it's like you have to work code names from predefined things, and if you play the game properly, you write your code list, and then there's a separate player who referees what orders you've given.
Holy
and then
shit.
They say what orders your ships can then follow. But what I was thinking, well, this
sounds amazing.
Yeah, I kind of love this.
Yeah, what's that board game where you're Robo Rally?
It's like Robo Rally for ships, but I want to play it with loads of other people. But you can't talk, and the only way you can communicate is by flag messages to each other.
There's some World War II board game that's like that. What is it? Operation
Memoir 44. Yeah, but imagine that if flags were involved.
Yeah. But,
so this bit sounds great. And then you just think,
I feel like that Beatles
linked
song.
Onto this is this horrific, impenetrable rule set where, like, you're cross-referencing tables and then looking at other tables and then within that there's sub variations on what you roll. It's very weird. I'd like to do a podcast specifically about it, but maybe it'd just be me slowly going insane trying to play this thing. And
reading excerpts.
Yeah,
from the I think book. You should live stream it personally.
Maybe. Well.
Twitch plays.
And
Admiral
weirdly,
of the Fleet.
There are no YouTube videos of any of these games. By the way,
I think we found a niche group. I think.
Yeah, a gap in the market right here.
I mean, I've started watching a lot of historical YouTube channels, and they are just one guy on their own playing war games with themselves. And it is, you know, there's that shiver.
I hope to be this person in 20 years' time.
Fear, the spectre of this looms large.
Nah, I'm into it.
So, it's so close to being good. I mean, maybe not so close. Do you want the final thing that's best about this game as well? There's no inch scale in it. It's to scale. So if you measure in inches, you then have to convert that into yards at 1 to 18,000 scale. And all movements in knots, because why wouldn't it be? So you have scaled rulers.
How many knots?
I don't know, because I just printed out some rulers from their webpage. So
that they have like custom rulers
and custom turn dials, and if
this sounds incredible.
Ships, you measure the number in inches, then you divide it by 2, and then you times it by 1,000, and that's the range in yards.
I mean,
fuck anyone who thinks that
it could be worse. I suppose
it could be. I'm not quite sure how. Well, it could be worse because these are their simple rules. Because they want they have a more complicated set of rules.
That is an example to me of like, because I quite like crunchy stuff and like, you know, a lot of stupid detail, but that to me is really an example of what is anyone getting out of that. Like, you're not losing anything by saying, you know, let's just measure in inches or centimeters, right? Or maybe some people think that you are.
I mean, immersion, right? Like, but you've already put on your naval officer's uniform.
Full 1879.
I mean, people do talk to the kind
dress
of
guy.
Literate Sea exists and Cruel Sea exists, which are both by the same people who do Bolt Action.
Yeah, that's Warlord games.
And they're really basic and really simple, and I'm just like turned off by them.
Mm.
And then there's no.
Well, and they're World War II as well, so presumably you're like, oh, what is this?
Oh no! There's an old game called Victory in Sea, which isn't the current one, and that had a World War One supplement. Which is when
that's
the half the ships that fought in World War One were the wonky bad ones from before. It's just they didn't do very well because they were wonky and bad. But yeah, this is just a massive gulf of rules. But it's just like you can have really simple or really, really, really complicated. This was the other thing that I've been doing. But the point of this story time was what are people's favourite and least favourite rules in games? What can you single out? Because the flag thing with this just sold it to me. And I was like, this is brilliant. Flags. I'm going to do Titanicus, but with flags. And it was perfect. But everything else around the game is bad. So, yeah, what is the kind of like a kind of video game, 7 out of 10 video game, what are the rules potentially that are brilliant in games, war games, but maybe like with a bad set of rules? Or what games are really good, but maybe have one or two really bad rules? I just wondered if people had their favourite rules and their least favourite rules and the sort of context around that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Big question.
I think I know what my favourite rule is, and this is a really, I don't know, masochistic answer for somebody that plays a lot of 40k in AOS, but my favourite rule is alternating activation, and loads of games do it now, but obviously not either of the mainline GW games, and I really, really, really wish that they'd push it more into either AOS or 40k.
It's very intuitive.
Mm.
Yeah.
It just avoids the whole, you know, somebody getting Alpha Strike problem that, you know, really persists in competitive play.
Have you considered playing one page rules?
Do they have alternating activations in it?
Alternating
activations. Oh, then I absolutely would. I think the problem with one page rules to me is I like the detail too much to consider that for a like full like a game that I'm into in capital letters as opposed to like just trying it out like a few times.
Yeah, there used to be a fair amount of like customization you can drill into. Anyway, that's a topic for another day. I don't know. when some of us have actually played one page rules, yeah, we can have a discussion about it. Right?
Were you thinking, Rachel, though, that the you know that I go you go is very intuitive then, and that helps it as a
I think it's intuitive in a sort of like you've got units and the game pieces are divided into units and the game like time is divided into alternating turns and it's just like I'm gonna move a guy then you can move a guy and I feel like people just get that immediately, rather than I move all my guys, then you move all your guys. But I don't know, like...
I like a lot of alternative activation games. I think the only time they tend to... I think particularly with... I think Necromunda, because the rounds of Necromunda last a long time to go through all the men, that it can actually get quite confused when the round actually ends, like particularly when it's like quite a big game. So that's kind of when it falls apart. It's like, oh god, have we actually finished this round yet? When you're still going through all the...
It is something you really have to keep track of. Although, I have to shout out my favourite game that I don't play anymore, which is Bolt Action. Because the way that you track who goes when isn't like, you know, I get a unit, you get a unit. It's each unit has a token in a bag and you draw them at random. And when you've used that unit, you put the token that has the order that they've performed on it next to the unit. And, oh, it's such a good rule set. I wish it wasn't a World War II game at the scale that it is at. Yeah, I love it. Maybe I'll collect it again.
Star Wars Legion is similar.
It's a cool system.
But that's...
I don't know much about it, but the few snippets of rules I've heard from it sound really good. Like, another... here's my favourite rule that I never used, but it's the Star Wars Legion thing where you measure the movement from the unit leader and everyone else just has to be in a radius around the unit leader and it doesn't matter like exactly how many inches the rest of them have moved. I think that's a really great idea.
Just don't worry about it.
It's different.
Yeah.
I really disliked that when I heard about it. And look.
Well, I've never played it, so it might be in practice I would hate it as well, but I just the sound of that abstraction, I really like it.
You have to be touching cover, don't you, as well? So to be in cover, you have to have your people sort of bunched up against the cover.
Okay.
I think that might be a different game, but having not played it.
Have any of us actually played it?
No, let's just assume things about Star Wars Legion.
I keep getting tempted because there's like a new box coming out, which is kind of things I'm more interested in. I mean, I find Star Wars incredibly boring as a universe, and it's probably because it's been ruined by 40k that you look at a Star Wars model and you go, it's just a man in a hat with a gun, why has he not got 400 pouches and those pouches are also skulls?
It's a very good question.
I mean, it was a more civilized age.
It was a more civilized age, yeah.
Yeah. The droids and stuff at least are all quite
I like the main
characterful and different. They have that. But yeah, I can agree that like
the rebels
all
are just
of the clone
like
troopers
guys
and
gals
and
in like modern military like
vests.
Guerrilla units really, aren't they? Yeah.
Got your tactical leather like vest on.
A soldier but they're wearing a hat instead of a helmet. That's basically the vibe of rebels, as far as I can tell.
But yeah. I mean I'm gonna stop moaning about Star Wars Legion and try and go back onto the rules topic at hand.
Well, that was your least favourite rule.
Star Wars Legion does another least favourite rule of mine, which is having equivalent of Hitler on the battlefield, where it's like, because it's Star Wars, and Star Wars these days seems to have no imagination, it's like, well, you're fielding a commander, it must be Timmy Darth Vader or Luke laser sword man, or like anyone else from the films. They can't just make up a person and be like, yeah, it's Commander so and so, he's got a gun and he's all right. It's like you've literally got to fight the Emperor in a field.
But that's the problem with the Star Wars films as well. It has to be around...
What, they're about the main characters?
Yeah, they're about the same family of people having galactic consequences.
Well, yeah. I wasn't expecting this podcast to turn into...
I mean, I'm all for it, but...
it's because Richard's bashing
session.
He'd just show us his tattoos and we'd have to shut up.
Feel sad for our opinions.
I mean, Rich is our most likely Star Wars Legion opponent as well, so we can't alienate him too much.
Anyway, to say something positive about Star Wars, I watched Star Wars the other day, and despite it feeling quite dated, I still enjoyed it. So there you go, the first one.
What was your favourite rule from
Episode
Star Wars,
one?
To go to my favourite rule, which is not necessarily Star Wars, but it's probably also in Star Wars, and we touched on it, was taking things out of bags. So it appears in two of my favourite board games. Like, one is the Sheriff of Nottingham, where you hide things in bags and then have to take them out of bags.
Yeah.
And Quacks of Quedlinburg, which is all about taking things out of bags until you explode. So... I mean, that's my favourite rule.
I love I love the little crime bags in Sheriff of Nottingham.
Crime bags are so much good. Fun. And also when you can be the sheriff and you immediately open things when you're handed them. It's just like, are you even going to ask me to negotiate? It's just like, no, I'm going to take your bag and have a look inside.
Well, not
and then people catch on.
Enough bags in war games, though. There's no crime bag.
There is no crime bag.
Yeah.
And maybe that's it. If someone's got like their dice in a bag or like tokens in a bag or anything in a bag, just give me stuff in bags.
Well, this is my, you know, my constant call is more people need to rip off Bolt Action. Just, yeah, get on it, designers.
Ooh.
What is it?
I've got a least favourite rule.
Ooh.
The
interesting
roll in Age of Sigmar.
I
get rid of it.
I completely agree with you in Age of Sigmar. I'd die on
the hill. Just have the hit roll. Just have the hit roll. It's fine.
In 40k, but in Age of Sigmar,
I don't think it really
yeah.
Really
yeah.
Makes it make you
I guess.
More dice,
I guess.
Which I guess is
if it was just one
the statistics
dice roll, then the possibility space is quite small, right?
Depends.
I guess that would be the defense of the wound roll.
How many dice you roll? Because you can do a lot of things with different dice.
Well, if you were going to move to like a d20 based system for AOS, that would be amazing.
I'm going to go off an even bigger tangent now. Free League Press, who do the roleplay games, at least one of their system is a d6 system, but the only thing that matters are sixes. That's the only success you get. And when I first saw that, I was like, this is fucking bonkers. How do you know, why are you rolling a d6? Only one of the bloody numbers means anything. But then as soon as you start looking at the percentages, and one of the key things they have as well is that you don't roll dice unless it's hard to do something, which obviously doesn't work in a war game. But like, you want to drive a car down a road, you've done it 100 times, it's fine. You want to, you know...
1 in 6 chance of it crashing.
Go back to Star Wars. That was the old, very old Star Wars roleplay game problem where you had like critical fail on a 1 on a d6. So if you only had levels 1 in a skill, you just died by existing. But yeah, in these games, they see, you know, they do a lot of things with d6s, but the probabilities are all over the place, which is, you know, is the option that you can have where, you know, you are doing a single roll, but it's the degrees of success, you know, how many sixes you get rather than, oh, well, this is one, you know, it's a 3+ on every dice and that's what it means. But instead, you know, it's the net successes. You can mess around with probability a lot with simple dice, I suppose.
I've remembered the rule which I don't like, and it is basically a Warhammer rule, and it's one I always forget, and it's Battle Shock. I think it's really dumb and boring.
Do you like the newer version in 40k?
I don't like it. I never liked it. I don't like it in 30k. I never liked it in second edition, and I don't like it in 40k.
There is, but it doesn't exist in 30k. You get morale checks and they literally run away. It's totally different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I hate it.
I was watching
The Horny Heresy.
The Horny Heresy game the other day, and like it was really cool seeing like when
I prefer that
they actually like fall backwards.
I prefer that when they actually have to fall back, and then you have the chance to overrun things and stuff. That at least has a bit of sort of that, almost like these are big men with bolt guns in massive armor, but they still turn around and run away like knights on a battlefield, and then they get stomped on because they were trying to run away, but they were fighting a tank or something. So that's fine. But in 40k, the fact that you like fight to a certain point in the turn, and then you can just kind of go, well, that one's going to run away anyway at the end of the turn, is just kind of dumb to me. Like, it's like, oh, you fought all of that unit and then there's one left or there's two left, and you just think, well, that one will just run away at the end. It's like, why not just take it off now and make it more interesting and make it
because
quicker?
You can have a stratagem that means it won't happen. That's
just another stratagem to pull out of the silly stratagem.
And also...
Don't
also,
and also
now,
I don't like
now.
It.
Now, James, and also, with the ninth edition morale rules, it's much more variable. Like, it's not a guaranteed loss of X number of people.
That is true.
I think you can modify it, which at least adds some interest.
Yeah,
I'm just not interested by it. I don't know why you're denying me.
You just don't think.
No,
I'm saying you're wrong.
I see the logic.
This
I
opinion
old,
is wrong. No, I mean, I don't...
One, sorry, the old 8th edition was bad. Is that old 8th what Age of Sigmar's got still?
Yeah, it's the same as AOS. I don't know, I think it makes sense in a game like AOS where, like, you know, it's sort of like an abstraction to make gigantic hordes actually somewhat dealable with, unless you're RCR Bone Reapers, and then good luck getting through 30 Mortuet Guard.
Yeah, I don't really mind the way Battleshock works in Age of Sigmar. It's just that historically there's been a lot of things that can kind of turn it off. That's another thing that's exciting about the new Nighthaunt rules is that like if you're near them, you can't ignore Battleshock.
James is,
you have to do the
hate
test.
This.
I mean, I would choose to play things that don't have Battleshock if I had more thoughts around what I was doing, but I just tend to pick armies based on the models I like, so...
You're in luck in Heresy because you do.
Well, more for you.
Yeah.
Sisters are all fearless, aren't they, in 30k? So,
yes. Yes, that is nice. And Custodes have got leadership 11 in 40k, so...
But it's the morale rules that you like in 30k, so...
Oh. Well, I didn't say I liked them. I said I preferred them.
Oh. I'm sorry. I think it's just too much.
To me, it's just like... I like moving and shooting. And maybe punching. Running away doesn't appeal.
Are you a fan of dying?
It's the enemy running away that you're supposed to be happy about. You're never supposed to be happy about your
enemy. Yeah, I think that's about right.
It's normal, right?
Do you like dying, James? Because they could get rid of that as well.
Yeah, if they could remove dying from the game as well, that would be nice. But only on my side. Yeah,
of course.
I've got a rule
I
like, and it was—I was proofing an article,
but only for you.
The day that reminded me of this, and it's a game I don't like, which is—you might have to remind me, Rachel, how exactly it works. But in Warcry, you get like a pool of special dice, and you can do things with the dice, and it was good. And although I don't like Warcry, the dice pool special fun things—I remember that being very exciting to me.
I like that system a lot because it kind of like it lets all the different special, all the different very varied sets of models have like slightly different special abilities, but you're never kind of like overwhelmed by them because like most of the time you're not going to get to use them all because you're constrained by what dice you rolled that turn
somehow with it by
which is cool. Yeah, so you can, like, I won't explain works, but yeah, you could like you can also use them as a way to determine who gets to go first in the games, in the round,
because it was, I don't know, exciting dice. Yeah, it's a cool system.
In general, like dice,
it's a cool system. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with,
can't believe they're on to Warcry 2 already.
Two or whatever it is.
Warcry 2, War Crime.
Warcry 2, the slightly worse logo. Pouring one out.
That's the worst Harry Potter title.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough about rules for now, anyway. Let us move on to Rachel's topic of the week. Okay.
Okay, didn't have a lot of time to give this a lot of thought, so I thought we'd go around in a circle and each of us will name a character from the Age of Sigmar lore, and the rest of us will try to agree on whether they are...
Excellent. Are you going to basically shout out a character first of all, and then we're going to decide as a group, or is it individual choice?
Yeah, I'll say a character, and then the three of you will
and then
come to an agreement.
If one gets two votes, that's the thing which we have to do to them,
or avoid this character.
This sounds.
Oh, I'm not sure if we're actually like. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's more of just discussion.
There's various problems with that notion, James.
I don't see any.
Some moral.
But once we've determined what to do with the first character, one of you three can.
You might have to do a lot of explaining, because I don't know
which character we're going to judge next. So. Okay, well, this will be a fun lesson for you and potentially many members of the audience who are not familiar with the great setting that is Warhammer Age of Sigmar. So how about start with Sigmar himself? He's a bachelor. He mostly just kind of hangs around in his house these days, but he is a... You know, sort of like a basically entrepreneur with a personal army that he sends off into the realms to do his bidding. He's very tall, muscular,
big weapon,
likes to wear golden armor all the time. Great facial hair, great hair in general. He used to have a big hammer, but
that's very noble of
now
him.
He lets one of his sons use it instead.
He's not like Miyazaki.
He's got kids. This is a lot of responsibility to be getting into.
So what are we thinking?
I mean, he seems dependable. Surely, does that count as married material?
Depends, he
did abandon the old world and let it die, didn't he? Which maybe is the worst sign of marriable material.
Well, not only that. Well, it's... So he kind of like abandoned the old world, I guess, in a way... I'm not sure if that was entirely his fault, but he, like, certainly closing the gates of his ear and letting the Age of Chaos begin, that I think is definitely...
That qualifies as what I believe the kids call a dick move.
A mark against his record.
Big get off my lawn energy from him. I get sort of Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino vibes from him.
God. An elderly racist.
Yes. But with a heart of gold, he's just a bit racist.
Yeah, and boy, has he got
is
a good
the
car.
Is that a monkey too, or is that a different film?
That's
a different
film. Yeah.
I
Rise of the Planet of the Monkeys.
He's got a big beard.
Wow.
I'm going to be beard prejudiced here. At the moment, I just think he's you know, it's quite real only. So, well, no, because I think I was going to say there's
James
plenty of short beards,
fuming in his seat.
People that I snog. it's just the it's the real ale beard. I don't think I'm down with. So,
Jesus, Sigmar's a member of Camry. Camry, not Camry.
Oh man.
Oh no, real ale.
Is he an IPA drinker?
Definitely real ale. If you've used the IPA crowd with an unwarranted amount of suspicion, I should think.
I am going to vote Mary. Because he's quite rich and he is quite old.
Ah, I see. Going for the old fucking to inheritance.
He's already given his... I don't think he's smart enough for a prenup. So... he's given his hammer away. You could always claim that back as part of the agreement afterwards, or say that you're very sad and you would like his hammer just to honour him, and then you get his hammer. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. I don't know about you two.
I like Gold Digger James. My favourite character.
Listen, if we're living in AOS, I think the best thing you can do is probably take the biggest guy's house.
I'm going to say avoid, because closing the dick move, closing the gates of his ear. I don't trust it. I've got fire.
My enduring mental image of Sigmar is that one from the reveal stream where he just smashes a new chamber button, and I like that energy. So I'm going to go with Mary. I'm going to get on Team James. Okay. But I don't want to fuck him to death. I want him to be garrulous.
Wow. Okay,
we're going to marry him. The podcast will marry him.
Okay, so podcast, we're going to marry Sigmar. Okay.
Cat across. Right. Well, I think we all know what the answer here is.
You'll have to explain.
I know what my answer would be.
Cat across.
Contingent on one. Here's the Ossiarch Bone Reaper's Mortark. And he's got quite the physique, Drew. Yeah. Look it up and zoom in. You don't really need to zoom in. That's my sales pitch.
So, isn't it? Yeah. First of all, I don't think he's fun at parties because he just brings all his mates. And he gives me that big energy of that bit in Bohemian Rhapsody when Freddy's with the other man and the band are clearly slandering the other man. But also, yeah, like, oh, he just brings all his friends over to the parties. Freddy doesn't get him, so I side against him. I don't like him. I'm going to avoid him.
Wow.
Oh, okay. I think I'm in camp. Snog. Definitely not a Mary. Don't really...
Yeah, you wouldn't...
He needs to be avoided. I guess there's a fear that he's, you know, he seems like the kind of, it's very, he's intimidating in a way, you know, you wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him, I guess.
Which he is literally the bad crowd.
Of going the snog route.
He's got it with him.
I just think his physical attributes outweigh everything else.
I'm pretty basic, so I think I'm going to go snog. Because he's,
what are you thinking, Drew?
A big, hulking, muscle-bound man.
Looks like we're snogging him.
Now you have to snog him.
Oh, sorry, James.
So I feel like last round I accidentally
snogging cat across.
Went through the eliding of the snog category and just kept saying fuck. So
that's not even in the list.
Well, it's not that so much as...
friendly podcast
just,
here, Peter.
What I want to say.
Previously going to say, do you want Sigmar to smash you like a open vaults button, but
when you put it like that, can I change my vote?
Oh god. What do they do with the anvil of apotheosis when they're
baby
stormcast?
Wanna see my anvil?
It's a sex table. Someone else put one quick.
Okay, anyway.
I'm going to go for a chap
James,
who has
James.
Two forms. I'm going to go for Radhikar the Wolf, a.k.a. Radhikar the Beast.
I mean, your tone of voice heavily prejudices me in one direction, but I don't know.
I feel like this is a hard one.
Into big hats.
Like, really don't like his vibe in general. yeah, like, I admit his sense of fashion has improved, since he became the beast, and wow. He's no longer wearing that awful hat. But yeah, still like very, very threatening.
He had a plan.
Does he?
That was the thing.
You know. Does he run the cursed city? Am I right in remembering that? Well, maybe that's me making a play for a James-esque seduce him into his inheritance sort of scenario. But on the other side of things, it does look like he might eat you. Oh, my phone's going off. It's okay.
It's not like Sigmar, though, because Sigmar can, like... like, he's got gold, other precious metals... stars and stuff.
He's the feudal lord of a city, though. That's got to count for something.
He did also go, like, Warhammer topknot when he got big.
Mm.
And he shows that you can grow as a person.
Oh. Yeah.
He's a grower and a shower.
Yeah.
Literally. I guess, like... I'm very curious about.
You think it's in their design document?
In general, like how do they what I want to know is
how Radica can show you.
Amazing.
I think I'm going to get my vote in early and continue just to be basic and just say Snog, because yeah, you definitely want to hit it and quit it, because I don't think he's long term potential. All his minions are just undead thralls, and I've got better things to do. So, yeah.
Well, I always wanted to collect... Oh, sorry, God. I always wanted to collect a vampire count's army, so I'm going to say marry, so I can marry into one.
It sounds like we're avoiding him. Oh, no.
Yeah, this is a dead tie, isn't it? Well, three-way tie.
It looks like we just throw him onto the fire and
de facto avoid. Wow,
de facto avoid, because indecisive at the party. He's there drinking. You're too shy to do anything, and then he just wanders off. Drew, I think it's your last choice.
I think I'd have to go with the biggest daddy of them all, which is Archaon the Ever Chosen.
Mm.
Is it?
Mm. I mean, this is very much Sigmar's opposite number.
But he's got a really cool.
That's already working against him.
So you don't really know what he looks like. Which.
It's like when you're at school and like somebody's got a car.
This is true.
And therefore they're immediately more impressive and dateable.
I mean, that's a universal thing, really, right?
But if Archaon was in school...
I should write, I have a car on my Hinge profile.
I have a three-headed horse. With wings.
With wings?
Well, the thing is...
This is a Snog for me.
If nothing else, it's bragging.
I want to know if the helmet stays on.
That would be Archaon's Hinge profile. The helmet stays on.
Yeah, he seems like a dangerous one, so I think just a little peck on the cheek from me. Maybe not quite a Snog. I see, he doesn't have much to like in the Mary camp. He's got the Varan Spire, but that place looks like a bit of a shithole when you compare it to Sigmar's realm, which is why he's trying to get in to touch all of Sigmar's stuff.
It's a lot of real estate.
Gentrified.
Yeah, I guess that Sigmar has really gentrified his place.
Not to be sniffed at.
So it might be quite pricey to get like even just like a beer. It's whereas in the Varan Spire,
tech billionaire again, isn't it, for Sigmar, which is definitely off-putting.
Yeah, maybe I want to revise my Sigmar thing. No, I don't know, because...
Yeah, we'll get it from your scheme.
That's the whole point of the scheme. We need to commit to that. Whereas, this Varan Spire deal is just kind of the bit where I'm not cool with it. There's like all these horrible gangs underneath.
Yeah, he probably turns you into a chaos spawn afterwards.
Well, it's not a risk I'm willing to take. That's a risk I'm willing to take. He can leave his hat on and he can leave the rest of his armor on and I'm going to avoid him. It's Tom Jones one sec.
Were you tentative, Snog, James? Or...
Yeah, I was a peck on the cheek. I want to keep him on side.
Snog's what won it.
Are we going to have a bonus for 3-2 chimp favourite in the gang?
Okay.
Oh, gosh, I thought you were going to say chimp. It's like, he's not an AOS character.
He is to me.
I don't know about Nagash. He seems really dedicated to his work, you know? I'm not sure if he's really marriageable material. Or snoggable material. Doesn't have lips.
Well, I've fully internalized Chimp's pet theory about him, which is that he is a Volcel, and thus Snog is completely off the cards. Snog. And yeah, I don't want to marry that guy. I don't want to hear the Skeletor laugh every morning.
He's just a... Yeah, he's like AOS's incel. He's awful. I don't like him. So...
Chimp's going to be upset, but I think this is a unanimous avoid.
It is a unanimous avoid. He's the... You know, he just like ruins
every... He's a good character. I just don't want to, you know, spend my life with
him. Every time he shows up, he just messes up, insults someone, doesn't understand, like, why everyone hates him, and doesn't learn. So, I'm not here to educate.
Also, as a Skaven player, I feel like I should be against his plans. So, there you go.
Perfect. Wow. So, Nagash is out. So, it looks like we're shacking up with Sigmar. So, yeah.
In order to snog him to death.
Perfect. Perfect. Alrighty then. I'm going to move right on. And we're going to go to the outros. Because we have had a long chat about all sorts of things. And it's always good to end those things, because that means you can get on with your life and do other things whilst waiting for the next episode, which we will get around to recording at some point. So, as always, you can find us at tinyplasticpeople.com. That is a website where you can find articles and fun stuff about the hobby. You can find things written by our community, and you can find other podcasts, including 3-2. Is it 3-2 or 3s and 2s?
Three and two,
which is
because that's the results of their competitive gaming.
Excellent. So that is our competitive AOS focused community podcast, which we love and support here on the podcast. And James forgets the name of, so that's great. We have been Tiny Plastic People. Drew, can you tell us where you can find us?
Find us?
No, find you. Were you listening to anything I said, Drew? This is the test.
Listening too well.
You can find me on Instagram at Drew_paints. And yeah, that's the only place you can find me.
Brilliant.
And Rachel. You can find me on Twitter at NERSHLY. That is Nershly. Yeah, I've said the thing. I can stop talking now.
Perfect. You can. I will allow it. And Pete.
If you want to look at pictures of my many, many painted models, find me on Instagram at Fienya, F-I-Y-E-N-Y-A-A. If you want to find me arguing with awful people on the internet, same handle on Twitter.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at alone_music, where you will see the occasional models, but mostly be me shouting into the void about bleeps which I've made. So, you can contact the Tiny Plastic People as a whole using email. Emails go to thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com, and we are at Tiny Plastic Pals on Twitter and Instagram. And with that, I have been James. It has been a lovely evening with Drew, Pete, and Rachel. So, with that, should we say goodbye?
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.